Every pilot knows that moment. You're doing your pre-flight fuel planning, you look at the route, you look at the reserves, and somewhere in the back of your mind you're doing the math. Can we make it? Do we need to stop? Is there enough margin? Now scale that question up to a round trip around a quarter of the globe. I'm Tower on ATIS. This is Radio Hangar, and today we're going to talk about the most extreme edge of commercial aviation range, the Airbus A350's 10 longest routes in 2026, because the headline, and I mean the number that gets the clicks, is 24 hours. But the real story is in the fine print. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com? Let's start with what we mean when we talk about ultra-long-haul flying. The industry generally puts that threshold somewhere around 16 hours of flight time. Anything beyond that is in a category of its own, a category that until relatively recently was largely theoretical. The aircraft that could fly those distances were either too small, too slow, or burned so much fuel the economics never worked out. The A350 changed that equation. Airbus introduced the A350XWB. The XWB stands for extra wide body, and it became the backbone of long-haul international flying for a reason. But the variant we're really talking about today is the A359ULR. The ULR designation means ultra long range, and that suffix is doing a lot of work. The standard A359 has a published range of around 8,700 nautical miles. That's already remarkable. The ULR variant pushes that out to approximately 9,700 nautical miles. They achieve that not through a completely new airframe, but through additional fuel tankage. The ULR carries roughly 170,000 liters of fuel. For context, a Cessna 172 burns somewhere around 10 gallons an hour. A single transatlantic trip for an airliner burns more fuel than some general aviation aircraft would use in a lifetime of flying. Here's what you need to know about the structural change they made. The A359ULR has additional center fuel tanks installed in what would otherwise be cargo space. That's the trade-off. When you're flying at the absolute edge of an aircraft's certified range, payload gives way to fuel. You can carry fewer passengers, fewer bags, less cargo. The economics only work if the people on board are willing to pay a premium for the non-stop service, and it turns out some of them are. Singapore Airlines was the launch customer, and they've operated the world's longest non-stop commercial routes using the ULR Singapore Changi to Newark, Singapore Changi to JFK. Those flights routinely clock in at 17 to 18 and a half hours, depending on winds and routing. But here's where the story from simple flying gets interesting. When you look at the 10 longest routes, the A350 operates in 2026, not necessarily non-stop, but the longest city pair connections that use this aircraft, only one of the top 10 is actually flown as a true non-stop service. Read that again. Of the 10 longest A350 routes by total distance, 9 of them require at least one stop. And I want to sit with that for a second because it tells us something important about the difference between what an aircraft can do and what airlines actually do. Let's think about why you'd take a stop on a route that an aircraft could theoretically fly direct. The first reason is payload. An A350 operating at its certified maximum range is doing so under significant fuel loading. That means restrictions on how much else it can carry. An airline might look at a route like Sydney to London and say, we could do this non-stop, but we'd have to restrict passenger loads and cargo to make the fuel math work. Or we can make one stop in Singapore, carry a full complement of passengers both legs, and actually generate more revenue across the operation. The second reason is crew. Ultra-long-haul flying under international regulations requires augmented crew complements. You're talking about multiple captains and first officers rotating through rest periods in dedicated crew rest facilities. That's a cost center. That's scheduling complexity. A stop can sometimes be used to swap crews and reset rest requirements rather than carrying all of that crew overhead on a single leg. The third reason is traffic rights. This one surprises people who haven't thought about it. Airlines don't just fly wherever they want. Bilateral air service agreements between countries determine which carriers can fly between which points and on what terms. A route that looks obvious on a great circle might run into the reality that the two countries involved haven't granted the necessary traffic rights for a specific city pair. A stop in a third country sometimes solves that puzzle. The fourth reason is demand distribution. If you're connecting, say, Europe to Southeast Asia, there may be substantial demand not just for the final destination, but for intermediate points along the route. A one-stop itinerary can actually aggregate more total revenue than a non-stop. because you're selling seats on both legs. So the fact that 9 of the 10 longest A350 routes in 2026 require a stop isn't a failure of the aircraft. It's a reflection of the commercial reality that surrounds it. Now let's talk about what it's actually like to operate at the far end of that range envelope. From a pilot's perspective, and I'm speaking here about what crews describe publicly and what aviation publications like AVWeb and AOPA have covered in their airline operations reporting, ultra-long-haul flying fundamentally changes the nature of the operation. You're not flying a trip, you're managing a physiological event. At 17, 18, 20 hours in the air, the crew rest protocols become as operationally significant as the route itself. The augmented crew will typically include 4 pilots. 2 will fly the departure, hand off to the relief crew for the middle portion of the flight. Then the original crew comes back for the arrival. The airplane is flying continuously for the entire duration of a working day, and then some. The sun may rise and set during a single flight leg. Passengers experience this in one way. Crew experience it differently. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, along with its international counterparts in the European Union Aviation Safety Agency, or EASA, and the Civil Aviation Authority in other jurisdictions, have regulations specifically governing flight and duty time for ultra-long-haul operations. Those regulations exist because fatigue at the controls of an airplane is a measurable safety risk. The data on this is not ambiguous. The human factors community has been researching ultra-long-haul fatigue for decades, and the research consistently shows that the biological cost of these operations is real and cumulative. That's why the crew rest facilities on aircraft like the A350 are engineered with the seriousness of a medical instrument. We're talking about horizontal bunks, noise isolation, temperature control. This isn't a marketing amenity, it's a safety system. Here's what's coming on the horizon that makes this story bigger than just a map of 10 routes. Qantas has been working on what they call Project Sunrise. The concept is direct flights from Sydney to London and Sydney to New York. Both would clock in at approximately 19 to 20 hours. The Sydney to London route would be the longest scheduled commercial service in the history of aviation by a significant margin. Qantas has ordered the A359ULR to operate these routes. The aircraft were ordered specifically with the Project Sunrise mission in mind, and Airbus worked with Qantas on cabin configurations that address the fatigue and wellness concerns of ultra-long-haul travel at that duration. We're talking about dedicated well-being zones on the aircraft. Movement areas, design choices that treat the cabin as something you have to survive comfortably, not just sit in. The target for Project Sunrise commercial operations has been in flux, but 2026 is when some of this starts becoming operational reality rather than announcement. Now, why does any of this matter to the pilot listening who flies a Cirrus or a Bonanza or a Cherokee and isn't planning on taking the left seat of a widebody anytime soon? A couple of reasons. The first is that the pressure on the ultra-long-haul envelope has downstream effects on everything in aviation when Airbus and Boeing are competing for the most efficient widebody aircraft on the planet. They're advancing aerodynamics, material science, engine efficiency, and avionics that eventually filter into the aircraft we all fly. The composite structures in modern light sport aircraft and experimental designs trace lineage to the research done for widebody programs. The fuel efficiency gains in turboprop and piston engines reflect lessons learned at the top of the performance pyramid. The second reason is that every pilot at every level understands range planning. The question of can I make it and what are my alternates is universal. Watching how airlines solve that problem at the extreme edge of what's possible is genuinely instructive. The discipline around fuel reserves, alternate planning, weather routing, the principles are the same whether you're flying 700 nautical miles in a Piper Saratoga or 9,000 nautical miles in an A350. The stakes are different. The framework is the same. The third reason, and I'll be honest with you about this one, is that it's just fascinating. Aviation is a discipline with a long tradition of people looking at a map, drawing a line between two points and asking whether it's possible. Whether the question was Charles Lindbergh looking at the North Atlantic, or Wiley Post circling the globe, or the engineers at Airbus calculating fuel loads for a Sydney to London leg, the spirit of the question is the same. How far can we go? The answer, in 2026, is very close to wherever you want. A few additional notes on the routes themselves. The top 10 in the simple flying analysis aren't all operated by the same airline. You've got Singapore Airlines, Qatar Airways, Air India, Etihad, and others in the mix. The routes span connections across Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Europe, Australia, and North America. What they have in common is the A350 as the enabling platform and total journey distances that put them at the outer boundary of what current commercial aviation can connect. The one non-stop in the top 10, and the source doesn't specify which route holds that distinction in their ranking, is a reminder of how narrow that operational window actually is. Of the 10 longest connections on this aircraft, 9 require a fuel stop or a crew swap point. That's not a knock on the airplane. It's a testament to how extreme those distances actually are. We'll credit Simple Flying for this week's look at the ultra-long-haul map. And you can find more at radiohanger.com. I'm Tower. Clear skies.